Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station. Broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Sunday evening, March 15, 2009. It is now about 8:02 p.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome to our program. This is Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. And during our live broadcast, we invite you to call 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. You can email us at comments@libertytalkradio.com. Do that anytime. comments@libertytalkradio.com. If you are listening to a rebroadcast, you may also phone in your comments to area code 918-919-0101. I also encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, mytwocentsonline.com. That's mytwocentsonline.com, and that two is a numeric two. In his weekly newsletter, Andy discusses economic issues and how they affect you. You can also listen to Andy's commentary on contraryinvestorscafe.com. contraryinvestorscafe.com. Folks, we all know what kind of a pickle we're in, and we need some clarity. We need to have a sane mind, someone who is intelligent, who has no hidden agenda, speak to us on what is going on. And Andy does an absolutely excellent job of that. Lastly, I would like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. And before I get off on that subject, if you would noticed that John Stewart took on Jim Cramer. And you can see that interview on YouTube. It's all over the internet. They're replaying it. It's probably one of the most watched replays in internet history or television history. And what they did is he took on Cramer and basically told Cramer what he was doing was fraudulent. What he was doing was actually hurting people, you know, who were relying on him, who took him as gospel, you know, as to what to do with their money. And he said, you know, he's supposed to be an entertain, he's supposed to be a financial person entertaining people. And he's entertaining people and he's hurting them. And if you watch this thing, I have never seen Jim Cramer sit at a chair behind a desk and look like a grammar school kid sitting there as if, you know, he was the one that pulled the girl's, you know, pigtails and now he's going to get in trouble. And he just stood there, just... I can't explain it. It wasn't Jim Cramer anymore. It was like a shadow of his former self. And he could not respond to any of the allegations. Now, I give Jim Cramer a lot of credit for going on the show. Because if I was him, I wouldn't have gone. I mean, if I was him. Now, I'm not him. I wouldn't do what he does. But Jim Cramer has given a lot of lousy information out. And I'll give you an example. One time he had Ron Paul on the program, on his program, and Ron Paul was talking about the Federal Reserve, the monetary situation, and he agreed with him 100%. And then he turns around and he starts recommending crap stocks to people that were the antithesis of what Ron Paul had just spoke about. He had the same thing with people like Peter Schiff on there about, you know, the system and the whole bit and how the whole thing is, financial system is corrupt. And it's going to collapse. The banks are going to go down. And Jim Cramer said, "Oh yeah, good, you know, good information." And then he went on and to recommend everybody, you know, that this guy, you know, that Schiff talked about against. And I'm just saying that, you know, this guy reminds me of somebody, you know, who's in reminds me of the wide world of wrestling or the EWF or whatever they call it these days on television, you know. They're, you know, it's entertainment. These guys are jumping on one another and they're pouncing on one another. They're not getting hurt. Now, they do get hurt. Don't get me wrong. These guys break many bones during their exhibitions and whatever. But they're entertainers. They're not wrestlers. And Jim Cramer's the same thing. He's not a financial wizard. He's not a financial advisor. You know, he's an entertainer. And anyone who would take his word, knowing, for example, that he says, you know, there's over 10,000 companies that constantly in his head that he keeps updated. Now, you could imagine trying to keep updated with 10. You couldn't get a computer to keep updated on 10,000 companies and where they're going. And this guy's supposed to know day to day what each one of these companies are doing. You know, he touts that. He actually touts that, and people believe it. Just like they believe a lot of people believe that professional wrestling is real. And then people get hurt. Many, many years ago, a good friend of mine, Bill, he actually invested when Bill Cramer gave this recommendation on these high-flying internet accounts. He immediately lost $20,000. Now, I'm not saying that anybody, you know, any financial person would be right 100% of the time, but Jim Cramer is not right, because he can't be right. He can't advise on every single company that is out there, and he cannot know every single facet of every single industry. It's just not possible. In fact, you could not know one industry well enough to know when to invest. Anyway, enough said about Jim Cramer. You should take a look at that. I received a whole bunch of emails, and I just want to read a couple of them to you. And some of them, I have to admit, were very flattering. And I certainly appreciate those emails, because, quite frankly, I need something to keep myself going. This station takes a lot out of me. There are days where I just want to do nothing. I'm going to just go somewhere, maybe read a novel, just enjoy myself and relax. But I know a program's coming up. I need to brush up on a subject, and bingo, you know. So my whole morning is doing research and reading and whatever. And I never seem to be satisfied, because no matter what I do, I never do a complete job, and it's always a bum's rush right before the program. And where I've been doing this now, it's going to go on 3 years, folks. 3 years, twice a week doing this. And it's tiring. And my point being is that all of that becomes worth it when I get words from people who say that what I am doing is important, that they actually listen to what I say. Not that what I say is, you know, gospel and everyone should listen to me and be my follower. You know, I don't want to be that. I don't want to be the Oprah Winfrey of libertarianism. I don't want any of that. But I do want people to think. I want people to think. I do not want them to listen. If you want to listen, turn the damn TV on and sit there with potato chips and a Coke or a Dr. Pepper and veg out. That's what you should be doing. But if you want to think, listen to this program, and then think. And whatever you do, if you do think, and there's a hole in what I'm saying, or something I'm saying is incorrect or incomplete, that's when I want to hear from you. That's what I really want to hear from you. And I do appreciate sometimes the thank yous. All right. This is from my friend Tom. And I'm going to take a minute, because this is so apropos for today. I'm not going to read the whole thing. It's about a story about the little red hen who scratches around the farm and finds some seeds and decides to plant them. And she asks the cow, the duck, the pig, and the goose, "Would you help me?" They say no. "Would you help me plant them?" They say no. "Will you help me reap them?" They say no. Yeah, I won't go through the whole thing, you know, but. "Would you help me bake the bread?" After she makes it, and no, they say no. They all have excuses, and I'm making this really short, by the way. And then when it came time, when the little red hen made the bread and had 5 loaves, they all came around and said, "Hey, we want some, we want some." And she said, "No, I shall eat all 5 loaves myself." And then the cow responded, "Excess profits, Nancy Pelosi." The duck screamed, "Capitalist leech, Barbara Boxer." The goose yelled, "I demand equal rights, Jesse Jackson." And then the pig grunted in disdain, and that's Ted Kennedy. and they all painted Unfair's picket signs and marched around the little red hen's, you know, place and pen, shouting obscenities. Then Farmer Obama came and he said to the little red hen, "You must not be so greedy." But she said, "I worked so hard and I earned the bread." He said, "Exactly," said Barack the farmer. "That is what makes our free enterprise system so wonderful. Anyone in the barnyard can earn as much as he wants. But under our modern government regulations, the productive workers must divide the fruits of their labor with those who are lazy and idle." And they lived happily ever after. Well, it goes on and on. And it just points out, that's exactly what we are doing. Tom, thanks a lot for bringing that in. I know you're listening. And Tom is from Chile, and I'd love to go down to Chile. He talks about his place, his little shed that he lives in, as he calls it, in between the mountain range, the Andes Mountains, and the Pacific Pond. It just sounds great. I think about that very often, Tom. I'd love to come down there. It's a long way. And he sent me another one, and he said he feels that Madoff, who made off with all that money with the Ponzi scheme, could not have had such a scam without a heck of a lot of help. Just accounting alone would require a lot of help. And he says, you could imagine their bookkeeping system. Tom, I agree with you 100%. Here's one from my friend Garrett. And Garrett sent me a long email. He said, "I listened to your Thursday night broadcast." And he references Dr. Albrecht talking about the RFID. He said, but it's a long email. I just can't read it to you because we don't have the time, and neither do you want to listen to the whole thing. He says, anyway, this is getting long-winded. I could go on forever, but he's from Canada. And he explains the perils of living in Canada with their system and how the libertarian movement is taking hold there, especially among the young people. And the government is either left or right, but it's all the same. I mean, it all winds up to be the same thing. Anyway, he says, this is getting long-winded. I could go on forever, but I know that you are busy. The incentive for this email is to let you know that I'm out there and listening. I appreciate your show. Enjoy listening twice a week. I might call in someday, but I usually listen after the show has been recorded. Keep up the good work. We need more people like you. Thank you, Garrett. I say that because that keeps me going. Now, I'm not suggesting that anyone who writes me must praise me. Please, don't go there. What I am suggesting is that you do write. Please do write, especially the criticisms, especially when you disagree. And if we disagree, I'll do a program on it. You know, if I'm wrong, believe me, I want to correct it. I want to correct myself if I'm wrong, because I don't know everything, and I do make mistakes. And a lot of times I catch my mistakes after the program, and it's just too late. I cannot suck the words back into my mouth. And so sometimes I just let them be. Sometimes I correct them in the next show. And those people who write in, I implore you, please call in. And I would even set some time aside for you to call in on a certain day, so we'll have plenty of time to discuss an issue that's important to you. This is your program. This is your program. Remember that. And, this is from Clint, and Clint says, great show with Dr. Albrecht. He said, too bad she wasn't on for 3 hours. I agree, Clint. Thank you for listening in. Appreciate that very much. And this email is from Joe. Joe, I don't know where Joe's from. He says, you are doing a great thing. Boy, that made me feel good. And he says, Google's not all that bad. He says, because I typed in Libertarian Radio, and he says, my site popped up. And he says, don't worry about the fact that you don't have too many callers. There are a lot of people who listen to my program, you know, other than live program. They listen to it streaming. And he says, I think libertarians need to appeal more to Democrats. If you knock some economic and fiscal sense into them, they become libertarians. And he says, Democrats plus economic sense equals libertarian. It's that simple. Well, sort of. And he goes on. Well, thank you very much. He says, I love your show. Thank you so much. Appreciate the emails. All right. I was going to get involved in a discussion of the fiscal crisis and how it relates to banking. And I just got the sign. This is time for station identification. You are listening to Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. And tonight we're going to talk a little bit about the auto industry and the systemic insanity that our government is in right now. That perpetrates, I guess our government perpetrates systemic insanity. Our call-in number is 646-652-4622. I'm sorry, 646-652-4620. 646-652-4620. Do please call in. You know, even if it's not about the subject that we're talking about, we'll take time. But I was going to go on with the financial stuff and all this stuff. And let me tell you what happened. My wife went on a trip. And we have an older car. And I said, well, wouldn't it be nice? I'd feel better if we just rented you a brand new car. So you went on this trip and I would just feel better to your new car. And she did that. And she rented the new car. And she really liked it. I said, well, take it. You like it, we'll buy one like it. You know, buy whatever you want. Anyway, as a result of that, you know, and my son called. He said, oh, geez, Dad, you got to see this car at the Mitsubishi dealership. It's great. It's only 6,000 miles on it. It's discounted. It's a beautiful car. It's got everything on it, blah, 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 blah. So we went to go see it. Well, today my wife and I went to go see that car, the Mitsubishi, and a real nice car. You know, now the place is closed. We're just walking around. This is great going on a Sunday when the place is closed. You can walk around, look at all the cars in the parking lot. At least you can get a feel for things. Now, there were four very large dealerships all next to each other. Two on one side of the street, two on the other side of the street. There was a Mitsubishi, there was a Toyota, a Nissan, and a Mazda. And we went to all those parking lots. Tons and tons of cars. I'm telling you, they have enough to supply Tulsa for the next year. But they all do. You know, they're all very, very big. But here's my point. These cars were relatively inexpensive. Now, you could buy expensive sports cars for $30,000 and $40,000 that have all the doodads on them. But for the most part, these were all Japanese cars, beautifully made, and high mileage. And you can get cars from brand new from $10,000 and up. Now, I mention that only because these companies are making money selling cars for $10,000 and $11,000. They're making money selling cars for $15,000. They're making money on cars selling for $20,000, $25,000, and $40,000. In other words, they have a business plan and they have a product, a quality product, that allows them to retain their customers and make money. Now, what doesn't that sound like? It doesn't sound like the American auto industry. And therein lies the problem. Now, we have government now twisting the arm of the auto industry, especially the American auto industry. They can't do this to the Japanese auto industry. They have no say over them, to make green cars. Let me give you an example of the unintended consequences here. We looked at one car, and it was small. And I'll be honest with you, I like small economical cars. I do not buy big boats or anything like that. I mean, cars are for transportation. I want the most basic. My motorcycle's the same way. I have very basic motorcycles. I love them. I ride them, you know, and I ride them every day. And I take them everywhere. But I buy what I need. I don't buy the big fluff stuff. All right. There are cars that get between 37 and 41 miles to the gallon. That's the range on the highway. Now think about that. And these cars have a 1.5 to 1.8 liter engine, you know, which is enough to get you around. You're not going to win any drag races, but they're pretty spiffy, right? But they're economical. And all they do is have a little four-cylinder engine in them. These cars are loaded with everything, folks. I mean, even the least expensive car, I've never owned one like that had all these doodads in it. And they come with standard equipment. And these Japanese companies are making money selling these cars. Now, the American auto industry, they're talking about green cars. Green cars. Green cars mean things like hybrids. Now, look at a hybrid. a hybrid would cost about $10,000 more than one of these small four-cylinder cars. About $10,000 more. They get about $10 more, 10 miles more per gallon. Just 10 miles more per gallon. They get about 50, these get about 40. And I'm talking roundish figures, folks. I mean, we can argue two miles in a gallon either way on each one of them. Now, that's on the highway. Now, in the city, you may have a little slight advantage, over advantage on that, but still about 10 miles on a gallon. Now, let's assume 15,000 miles a year. Do you know how long it will take, based on gasoline, based on $4 per gallon, how long it will take for you to make up that $10,000? Well, I did it quick and dirty, about 20 years. Now, that means in 20 years, you'd finally break even, and your car would have 300,000 miles on it. Very unlikely. Now, what they're pushing the American manufacturers to do is to sell cars that are very expensive at a time when people are trying to conserve. They would rather go out and buy a car that's 3 years old, maybe gets a little worse gas mileage, but would be $15,000 to $20,000 less. Just think about that. Instead of $28,000, because a Prius costs about $28,000. That's the average for a Prius, $28,000. Now, instead of spending $28,000, people are going to buy used, maybe Hondas or Toyotas or whatever it is, or any car that's economical, that's 3 years old, and maybe spend $6,000 to $8,000. They're going to spend $20,000 less. The U.S. auto industry right now loses money on every car they make. They only make money on trucks and SUVs. They lose a hell of a lot of money on the hybrid cars. Every hybrid car they sell, they actually lose money on. Now, they're going to be forced to sell or produce more hybrids. They're going to produce cars that people would like to have but can't afford. Don't want to spend the money. It's economically, it distorts the marketplace. They don't have the money for it. They don't want to spend the money for it. They sit down, do some basic math, and they go, whoop, you know, what am I doing this for? This doesn't make any sense. And they don't buy the car. So instead of buying the American hybrid, they may buy the Mazda or the Mitsubishi, you know, for $10,000 or $15,000 and get only 40 miles to the gallon. Now, you could say, well, America can make small cars too. But what has been the American manufacturer's track record with small cars? Summed up in one word, crap. Absolute crap. We have never made a small car that can compete with the Honda, the Toyota, the Mazda, the Mitsubishi, and the Nissan. Can't do it. We never have. Now, maybe we say that we're going to do that. But remember now, the auto industry loses money on those cars. They don't make any money. They make money on trucks and SUVs. That's where they made their money. You see how distorted the entire place is? We are subsidizing companies that are no longer efficient. We are subsidizing inefficiency. And please spare me, well, you know, if General Motors and Ford and Chrysler go under, look at all the jobs. Well, in England, they had the same situation. No one wanted to buy an English car because they weren't competitive on a global scale. And what did they do? For 20 years or so, well, after they nationalized the auto industry because it got so bad, they kept on subsidizing it. They finally took it over, became a nationalized industry, and they still couldn't make cars because they were not being driven by profit and loss. It was a political organization, and they were just trying to keep people working. The cars didn't sell, and they continued not to sell, but they kept on producing crappy cars and keeping people on the payroll. Now, they say, well, look at all the jobs that were saved. Well, slowly but surely, they started letting people off. It started getting smaller and smaller because their market share was getting smaller and smaller. But the cost to the citizen in form of taxes, you know, was horrendous. The economy did not gain. There was no gain for the economy at all. Now, if they allowed, the British government allowed it to go into bankruptcy, the only people who would have picked up the auto industry in Britain are those people who would have made it work. And I'll give you an example. Triumph. Triumph couldn't made a pretty car, a cute little sports car. They never ran. Triumph today makes a motorcycle. And it's a three-cylinder. And they make a host of motorcycles today that have a frequency of repair record that is the best in the industry, and it tops Toyota, it tops Honda. And Honda was always number one. Because private enterprise came in and said, we're going to build a motorcycle, and we know if we don't build the absolutely the best motorcycle, if it's not that good, no one will even look at us. Because first of all, we have a bad name, we have to overcome the bad name, and we have to make an exceptional motorcycle at a decent price, and people are going to have to want to buy it. And that's what they did, and they're doing very well, thank you, without government. Now, this is what's happening to us here in America with General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler. We are subsidizing incompetence. We are subsidizing inefficiency. Do you know that Toyota, years ago, and GM knew this was coming, by the way. This is nothing new. GM was told this and told this, and anyone who started preaching this within the organization was fired. They didn't want to hear it because they just couldn't believe that a foreign firm would take over the mammoth, behemoth General Motors. They just could not believe it could ever happen. And it did. And now we have a corporation that is starting to be. Here's a beauty. I saw on on Speed TV. I get satellite TV. Speed TV. There's a car program, and there's a whole bunch of cars programs. But this one, you know, introduces new cars. And this morning, I just turned it on before I left the house, and they were talking about the brand new Corvette, and I know the model is something like a ZR1 Corvette. Now, it looked like every other Corvette. Didn't look any different, quite frankly. They looked like a Corvette. They haven't changed the style for 100 years. Anyway, and they you know, had the thing go around the track and on the roads and this and that. It was a pretty car. And they said, and this car now sells for, as tested, was $103,572 plus $17,000 for a gas guzzling tax. Now, folks, here we are. General Motors is in a pickle. They can't sell any cars. The economy is tanking. People are losing their jobs left and right. Money is extremely tight. People can't get loans unless you're the prima donna of money, you know. And here, Corvette comes out with a car for $120,000. Now, I can't see it. I don't know where they're going. Why introduce a car for $120,000? A Corvette at $60,000 would be too much money. $120,000. Now, it'll probably be limited edition. But why spend your time and energy on something like that? You know, it's just so typical of General Motors to come out with the wrong car at the absolutely the wrong time. And I just stood there, shook my head, turned the TV off, and went out of the house, got on my one-cylinder motorcycle to get 55 miles to the gallon, and I took off. But we can't allow, as we allow the government, and we keep on praising the government for saving jobs, all it does is it depreciates the currency, it gives us the illusion that jobs are safe and that we can do what we were doing before and get away with it. And there's the illusion. You see, we will continue to do what we were doing before. And that's what we got to change. And we can only change that if we allow these companies to fail. And I want to read you an interesting quote. I have it here somewhere. Yeah. This was from House of Representatives, U.S. House of Representatives, his name is Jeb Hensarling of Texas. He says, once you lose your freedom to fail, you also lose your freedom to succeed, and you cease to be a free society. Think about that. We are going to have an auto industry that cannot fail. If the auto industry cannot fail, where is the motive to build a car to sell? There is none. That's gone. It's distorted. It can't work anymore. And by the way, it's 8:30 now. We're going to be on here about 15 more minutes. My name is Joe Cristiano. You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. Our call-in number is 646-652-4620. 646-652-4620. Please call in. We got 5 open lines. No one's called in this tonight. And last week we had tons of calls. I don't know. It goes in waves for some reason. The moral hazard that we are painting ourselves into is going to be long-lasting. Now, people say we need government because without government, we will have no regulation. And without regulation, we have fettered, unrestricted capitalism, and everyone will get hurt. Well, folks, I have an answer to that. You see, the only regulator is the profit and loss motive, is the free market itself. If General Motors knew they would not get a dime from anyone, they're not going to get it from investors because they're not making any money, they're not going to get it from the government, they're not getting it from overseas, they're not getting it from anywhere, they're not getting it from the banks, they can't issue any bonds, no one will buy them because they don't think they're going to be around. What would General Motors do? Just continue what they're doing now? No, they get in a room with the union people and say, guys, I'll be honest with you. Management screwed up. We screwed this company real to the wall. We're at fault for everything. Now, are we going to save the company or are we going to let it die? We have a choice, and we're going to make that decision within the next 5 minutes. Very simple. That's what I would do. I wouldn't say it was the union's fault because there would be no union if management was decent. Management was not decent. Management was awful. And they needed a union to protect themselves from bad management. No company gets a union that they don't want. Management always invites the union. Always. Because if you have good management practices, you have a company where people feel that they're being treated fairly, why the hell would they want a union and pay part of their pay to another corrupt organization? But you have to be really disgusted and be at wit's end to vote a union in. Management has to be that bad. And that's what it was. Management was that bad. Now, if management sat down and said, we were that bad, in fact, we were worse. In fact, if you really knew how bad we were, you wouldn't even sit in the same room with us. But that's water underneath the bridge now. Either we're going to save the company or we're not. You got a choice. You're going to make this decision in 5 minutes. You don't make the decision in 5 minutes, we close it down and that's it. It's gone. Everyone's out of a job. Everybody, including you. What do you want to do? Very simple. Now, they could say, well, you know, according to our there are no contracts. We're in business. We're closing up. Contracts are null and void. Now, what are we going to do? We have to make cars more efficiently than Toyota, of better quality than Honda, more appeal than the Mazdas, and they go all the way down the line. And we have to do that immediately. How are we going to do that? All of a sudden, you have the profit motive. Everything becomes extremely efficient, and they start turning things around. Now, they may not succeed, and they may go out of business. But I'll tell you, folks, after my wife and I looked at all those cars, I thought to myself, GM doesn't stand a chance. These cars are beautifully made, they're fully equipped, they're relatively inexpensive, and they are plentiful, and they're highly competitive, and they're competing against one another. The competition, when you stand in those parking lots, you realize that the competition is so fierce. Now, isn't it strange that we spend time in a Mazda, a Nissan, a Mitsubishi, in a Toyota parking lot, a used car lot. We didn't go to Chrysler. We didn't go to Ford, and we didn't go to Chevy, and they were down right down the street. That's interesting, isn't it? Now, we didn't do it intentionally because we were on that side of the street. Basically, I mean, that they were on one end and we were on the other end. But we were in a car. We could have gone down and done that. And we didn't. We didn't bother taking the time. What does that tell you about the American psyche and the automotive industry? That means we are going to be taxed further in order to support the auto industry. An auto industry that no one wants and no one needs and no one cares. The only people who care are the people who have their jobs. But they will have their jobs. Most of them will have their jobs because they will file bankruptcy. They'll have to file bankruptcy. Or they'll eventually lose their jobs. They'll lose market share. Now, you can imagine an auto industry run by Washington, run by the bureaucrats, how efficient that would be and how competitive they will be. In other words, they'll continue to lose market share to a point where they have to give it up. And this will have to be mega billions of dollars spent and just gone down a dry hole. Just think about that. Now, we can't think of the situation as if, well, you know, it's American and this and that. That's garbage. That is garbage, garbage, garbage. If it was American, it would work. But it's not American anymore because the government took it over. It's socialistic. It's a socialistic enterprise. And socialism has never, ever once proved itself in any country, anywhere around the world. And what is Barack Obama doing? More socialism. More bailouts. More nationalization. Folks, I'm just not very high on what's going on right now. I think on Thursday morning we have our next live broadcast. I'd like to talk a little bit about the banking industry and the problems that we have there. Well, you know the problem we have there, but sort of how we backed into that, you know, why we should not have done it, and what it's going to wind up costing us. Oh, and by the way, I think I must have read this once before, but there's a report called Detroit's Painful New Car Report. And it has here a score of by Consumer Reports, which cars models were good and whatever. And the top company was Honda. Let me read them to you. Honda, Subaru. We own a Subaru. They are phenomenal cars. Honda, Subaru, Toyota, Mazda, Mercedes-Benz, Nissan, Volkswagen, BMW, Hyundai, Volvo, Mitsubishi. Now, look at the bottom. Ford, Suzuki, General Motors, and Chrysler. Of course, the ones at the top of the list were ones that were recommended. Those at the bottom were not recommended. So what do you think is going to happen now? They're going to go out of business. And folks, before they go out of business, the way things are going, it's going to cost us a heck of a lot of money. They're going to force the automakers to make green cars that no one could afford, nor does anyone want. I don't want a car with two motors in them. I don't want a car that has a battery pack that costs $9,000, and when it goes, I have to spend $9,000 for a new battery pack. I'll do with a 10-mile-an-hour less and have an efficient four-cylinder car that'll run me for 200,000, 250,000 miles. Thank you. And after 300,000 miles, I'll break even. You know, with the Prius. You know, as far as gas mileage. No, if I had a Prius, it'd take me 20 years to break even with my car. There just is absolutely no economic sense in what we're doing. Now, this week in the market, we're probably going to get, we may get a bounce, it may go back down again. But there's no good news out there. There's not enough good news out there on any front. Now, we have these bear market bounces, you know, rallies and whatever, and they go up. They had the same thing during the Depression. And at this point, we have no place to go but down. We're not going anywhere, folks. We have the bond bubble that's coming up. We have the credit card crisis that's coming up. The housing crisis continues to worsen. And all the money, the trillions of dollars that went into the investment community that we don't know exactly where it went and how it was spent and what it really did, and no one will tell us, should be an indication of how Washington runs things. Anyway, I yapped enough about the auto industry. I am convinced after looking at those cars, just walking around, you get a sense that General Motors just cannot compete. They cannot compete. They cannot make a $10,000 car as Mitsubishi can, or $11,000 car, whatever it was, you know, with all the features, nice-looking car. I mean, you can tell it's well-built, rides beautifully, you know, and make any money. And we're going to subsidize them. Makes no sense at all. Anyway, we had no call-ins this evening, and I'm not a happy camper because of that. I really wish we'd get more call-ins. It would really help me steer the conversation one way or another. But this is Joe Cristiano, and we're going to sign off now. This is the end of tonight's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for the financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there's no middle ground. Folks, freedom is like riding a motorcycle. You feel free, liberated. Your life is in your own hands, but with that freedom comes responsibility and risk. The government is like training wheels. Your ride is controlled, and that isn't any more fun. Ron Paul has a sign on his desk that says, "Don't steal, the government hates competition." With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well, stay tuned.